strange, particularly in this legislative session, but we have worked with the governor, and the last meeting that we had was in the governor's office. We anticipate the governor's support of this bill. Senator Rest is carrying it in the Senate, and it passed her committee, I believe, on Tuesday, Monday. So it's moving in the Senate also.
Again, just to finish up the section on the Department of Employment and Economic Development, there are also waivers authorized, and those are again described in the bill summary. Section 8 is the Department of Health. This gives the Commissioner of Health a responsibility to assess and evaluate various health concerns that are related to the disaster in the disaster area, including indoor and outdoor environments, public facilities, swimming pools, drinking water systems, private wells, and it gives the commissioner the authority to take the steps that are necessary to remediate the health effects of the disaster, and allows the commissioner, again with appropriations specifically made for this purpose, to provide grants to local boards of health to assist with this effort. Section 9 is the Housing Finance Agency. This is the agency that provides assistance to homeowners and rental housing in a disaster area. Their programs go through the Economic Development and Housing Talent Grant Program, which is a statutory program. It allows the agency to assist both homeowners and rental property owners with forgivable loans up to a maximum that would be set in law in any disaster bill to implement this chapter. It allows the loans to be used for capital improvements to housing, and it allows the loans to be forgiven if the house remains the owner's primary residence for a period of time after the disaster, and it's not specified in the statute what that period of time would be, but allows the commissioner or the agency to set that limit. But for rental property, the loan can be forgiven if the rents in those properties remain affordable to the local workforce for a minimum period of time of 10 years after the disaster. Subdivision 3 of Section 9 is another type of grant that the agency may make, and that's to local units of government or regional organizations to assess the needs in the area and to develop plans to respond to those needs, to kind of implement recovery plans in that area. Once again, Subdivision 4 authorizes some waivers specific to the Housing Finance Agency. Another aspect of this bill that's not in the waiver but is in Subdivision 2 is that it allows the agency to set income limits for assistance under this program that are different than the statutory limits right now, but it doesn't prescribe what those limits are. Section 10 is for the Department of Human Services. It allows the commissioner to make payments to organizations and entities that have an arrangement with the department to provide services. And it allows them to be paid for the cost of evacuating or transporting or providing other type of medical or remedial services to residents, vulnerable residents of the area. Excuse me. It sets a time period of 60 days for the provision of services for which payments can be made, and allows the commissioner to allocate certain funding with approval from the federal government under Medicaid or Medicare. It allows the commissioner to make other types of payments, again, to organizations that have a contractual, some type of contractual arrangement with the department for child care, health care, social services, or other services that are provided on behalf of the department to residents of the area if that resident has been forced to move from the disaster area because of the disaster. Social service payments and child care payments are tied to your residence, and if you have to move, it creates an ambiguous situation. So this allows them to make payments in those circumstances. Section 11 is for the Historical Society. It simply says that the Historical Society can use any appropriations to respond to the disaster for historic structures or other historic resources that are damaged by the disaster. Section 12 is the Department of Natural Resources. It allows the commissioner to use state appropriations to repair any state property that's damaged in the disaster, and also to use specific appropriations for flood hazard mitigation, which is a way to prevent or alleviate future damage. And that's specific to flood disasters. The bulk of the bill is for any disaster. It could be a tornado, it could be a flood, but flood hazard mitigation grants are specific to flood. Subdivision 3 allows the commissioner to use appropriations to remove debris that has been caused by the disaster from lakes and streams within the disaster area. And once again, Subdivision 4 authorizes some waivers of existing statutes. Section 13 is the Pollution Control Agency, and this is a general authority to use the Petroleum Release Cleanup Fund for grants for properties that have been damaged by a release of petroleum attributable to this disaster. Section 14 is the Public Facilities Authority. This is the entity that makes grants to local units of government for rehabilitation of publicly owned infrastructure, and this just emphasizes their authority to do that, and it says that the cost must be related to the damage that's caused by the disaster. It allows them to use a general fund appropriation to assess the needs in the area for disaster for infrastructure remediation. And again, it authorizes some waivers of law. Section 15 is the Department of Public Safety. This is the Department of Public Safety Emergency Management. They are the lead agency to disperse the FEMA funds that we get for federal disasters, and so this allows them to use state appropriations to match those FEMA funds. And it requires them to use any bond proceeds that are appropriated for that purpose for capital improvement projects. And Subdivision 2 gives them authority to use a general fund appropriation for grants to counties for certain costs related to debris removal from residents and farms. Section 16 is the Department of Transportation. It authorizes the commissioner to use trunk highway funds for infrastructure operation and maintenance that's related to a disaster. This is identical language to the language that was in the most recent disaster relief bill. Subdivision 2 is authorizes them to repair trunk highways and trunk highway bridges in the disaster area. Subdivision 3 does the same for local roads and bridges by making grants to local governments for the cost of reconstructing those local roads and bridges. And it allows the commissioner to determine the project priorities for local roads and bridges, to review the plans and to approve them. Subdivision 4 asked the Commissioner of Transportation, in consultation with the Commissioner of Public Safety, to develop certain guidelines for local governments to use when they respond to a natural disaster in the transportation area, in order to maximize the use of federal disaster assistance funds. And Subdivision 5, again, provides some waivers of statutes.
Member, once again, I want to thank Ms. Novak. Her work since October until now on the numerous drafts of this bill has been exceptional, and also all of the agencies that have been involved working on this bill and the governor's office. It has been outstanding to work with everyone, and an example of how patient, diligent work hopefully will have a base now for the state of Minnesota in its 150th year, when a disaster hopefully will never strike the state again, but if one does, we will not be in the situation where we will throw a bill together the day before a special session and hope that whatever we pass addresses the concerns of the citizens of the state of Minnesota. That's the intent of this bill. So with that, members, if you have any questions.
Representative Zemmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, I've got several, but I'll only ask a couple. And thank you for doing this, by the way. And thank you to all the people that have put their time into this. We appreciate the governor's help. Page 4, under eligible organizations, line 4.31, does a nonprofit organization include within that churches, religious institutions?
Representative Pawlowski.
Representative Emmer, yes, I believe it would include churches. We have a number of nonprofit organizations. I'm going to use the Southeastern Minnesota flood because it's the most recent. But we have a number of nonprofit organizations. There was no clarity on how we could assist them. And throughout this, and you could list a slew of them, Homey Community Options, DAC, we were grappling with how we assist them. This bill hopefully clarifies that we can assist them, that when they're damaged. And if you notice that the churches in particular were a great help. Most of the feeding of the volunteers actually came through churches who fed them breakfast, lunch, and dinner for months because there was no other place to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. I was only concerned, and I thought there should be a record. I would assume, based on what you've got here, that it would apply regardless of whether there's some religious affiliation or designation, but I thought it was important to ask. Next, if you could go to page 5, up at lines 5-4 and 5-5, actually that entire paragraph, forgive me, but I have no idea what you mean there. Could you explain to me what that means, that the commissioner must encourage contractors working on projects funded under this chapter to hire employees who are available through a grant under this subdivision?
Ms. Novak?
Senator and Representative Dimmer, this is specific to a federal emergency grant that's given through the Department of Labor. And it has been in at least the last two disaster relief bills. And the intent of the grant is to provide, in part, is to provide employment to people in the area who may not be able to work due to the disaster. And so it's just restating the purpose of that federal grant.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, if you could take a look, this the reference to the Minnesota Historical Society at page 6 and 7, I'm just a little concerned. I like what you're doing, and I understand what you're doing, but it seems to be a rather broad, as opposed to structures that have been designated as historic structures. You've basically opened up Pandora's box.
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, Yes and no. This is language that actually comes from the State Historical Society, and the reason why we use structures here, I think they had buildings in the first draft and structures, because if we look through just southeastern Minnesota, we had the Arches, which is a historic bridge in southeastern Minnesota. We had the Rushford Mill. There were associated buildings, structures that they're not designated necessarily historic in the sense you just alluded to, but the local county historical societies would have a very difficult time rebuilding or replacing those structures or repairing them. So the goal of this was if their money was available to assist them. And this actually is language that has been in almost all of the disaster bills. Our only change was from buildings to structures, so that those monies could be used on structures, for instance, such as the bridge, which isn't a building.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative
Pawlowski, then if you could just clarify. So it does, I mean, I understand when you said it does and it doesn't, but I want clarity on basically what you've done is purposely, rather than restrict it to buildings that have been designated by an organization as historical buildings, you are opening it up so that people can apply if they think some structure has some historic, and then how is that going to work?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, our local county historical societies are funded locally. They do not get a copious amount of money from the State Historical Society. The goal here is to allow the State Historical Society to help them in the event of a disaster. So this is the problem. If you visit any of our county historical societies, they are funded on a shoestring. And unfortunately, that's the history of this state. It isn't all in the metropolitan area. Other parts of this state existed prior to Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we would hope that they would still exist after a disaster. So this is to allow the State Historical Society to use those funds to help them.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, thank you, because I had no idea that there were things that existed before the Twin Cities. if you could...
Representative Emmer, we'd like to encourage that. History teachers do.
I got along, Madam Chair, and Representative Pawlowski with most of my teachers. at page 3, if you could go back to the education, there is a question about that I'm wondering if you and the agencies actually involved discuss. You have no time frame, and I'm specifically referring to Section 6 under the Disaster Enrollment Impact Aid. It says that they can apply for aid, but you don't limit it to the year after, and it seems that based on the way it's written, it could go on ad nauseum.
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, this bill is meant to be a policy framework. Given each disaster, those limits are usually passed in the specific disaster legislation. This is meant to be a base. So if a disaster would strike, whatever it would be, those limits would then be incorporated during whatever disaster legislation is passed. So our intent here is not to have that type of specificity, but to allow that to occur when the particular disaster strikes. I don't know what limit I would put in because of the type of disaster. If it be a flood or a tornado or some other type of disaster, I wouldn't know. But that would be the responsibility of the legislature when they appropriate the money.
Well, Madam Chair?
Yes,
Representative Pawlowski, I was done until you said I don't know what kind of a limit I would put in. This is specific to schools. And I can understand when a tragedy, the catastrophe of a flood comes in and the school's been damaged so that the pupils have to go somewhere else. But there is a period of time, hopefully within 6 months to a year, when you can have that building ready to go. That's the only reason I was asking. And you don't need to comment further because I do appreciate the fact, and thank you for reminding me, it is just a framework. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wolfire?
Well, Chair, members, Representative Pawlowski, I was on a school board for 8 years, and we dealt a lot with mold over the years. And so I guess that's what came to mind when Representative Emmer was questioning this. And is this an example of where you would leave it open-ended because you could have an area flooded, and then over time you would have, you know, something such as mold that would come up and would become a problem much later?
Madam Chair, Representative Volkswagen, that's not a presidential disaster. So that it might be the result of a presidential disaster, but it isn't. That is something that you as a school board member would have to deal with. So.
Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pulaski, I too want to thank you for putting together this framework. I think it's smart, and I can't believe that we haven't done it before. But I had a couple of questions, just two, and I'm looking at the education section on page 4. And it's talking about, and perhaps you covered this earlier, and I apologize if that's the case, but you're talking about number of pupils lost as a result of the disaster and that they would receive aid based on that. And that they have to provide some kind of documentation. Are they taking, a lot of school districts in southern Minnesota, unfortunately, are experiencing declining enrollment. So is that being taken into account when they're providing the documentation? How do you differentiate between what is just natural declining enrollment and what happens as a result of the disaster?
Representative Pulaski.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, declining enrollment would have been factored in before a disaster would have struck, I mean, whatever the enrollment is of the particular school district. This is meant that if there is an enrollment decline, for instance, because you literally cannot, at that point, house those students for whatever purposes. The building, for instance, is no longer available, so those students have to go somewhere else. Or, as we had a unique thing in southeastern Minnesota, we had bridges cut so that you could not transport students to a particular school district, which was their home school district. And until the bridge was repaired, those students probably would have had to have gone to another school district. Luckily, they found a way around that, but the anticipation was that the buses simply couldn't get to the schools. So this isn't an attempt to go around declining enrollment. That's set by the department. That's a different issue. This is the result of what would happen once a disaster struck, and the school district would not be able to have those students in the district. And we would hope that the funding would still follow until the repairs are made, or you could actually transport the students to the district.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you, Representative Slosky. Then my second question is related to the Public Facilities Authority, and it's talking about extending a feasibility study on extending services to areas with septic systems damaged by the disaster. And, you know, I vaguely recall people getting upset when cities try to do that. Are we going to run into problems of annexation and maybe homeowners not wishing to have those services extended? Are the wishes of the homeowner going to be taken into consideration? How does that work?
Representative Crosby.
Madam Chair, Representative, can you point to the specific page and line?
Sure. It is on page 8.
Page 8.
Yep. And it's basically 8.1 through 8.5. And it starts on 8.3 where it says, or for feasibility studies to address the possibility of extending municipal service to residential areas with septic system damage as a result of a disaster. Am I missing? Maybe I'm missing something here.
Can you repeat your question then?
Is this a situation where these are people that are outside of the city limits that have these septic systems? And are we going to run into problems where people are going to be upset because they don't want to have these services extended to them? Are the wishes of the homeowner going to be taken into consideration, say, after this, if they don't want to have these services extended to them, how is that going to work? Or is this thing?
Representative Lusky.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is a study of the possibility of playing.
Okay.
So they would have to take into consideration both the local unit of government and those areas or homes that would want to be included.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Paul Steer, Ms. Novak, in unlikely case that we had a chief executive that actually wanted to pay attention to these, are there criteria established for the federal declaration of a disaster, or is that just entirely?
Representative Pulaski.
Then I'm going to let Ms. Novak handle that.
Ms. Novak.
Yes, it's based on an event that occurs, and there is a process in place for states to request a presidential declaration of a disaster, and if there are criteria established, I believe they are published in the Federal Register every year. It has to be, the state has to certify that they can't afford to respond, and that's based on a share of the cost of personal income in the state.
Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I don't have a question, I guess it's a comment. In the last 6 months or so, I have been working on a task force dealing with disaster preparedness in the state, and one of the things that we have learned is that the southeastern Minnesota part of the state was not, or southeastern Minnesota was not as well prepared to deal with their flooding as the city of Minneapolis was prepared to deal with a bridge collapse. And this is what you're doing is very important as part of the secondary response to a disaster, because it provides for an orderly handoff and an orderly approach to moving from the kind of first phase into the recovery phase. But I would hope that there is continued interest in what we've learned last August about how well things went or how well things didn't go. And in particular on the emergency response, the communication challenges in that section of the state, the lack of resources for emergency management personnel to be trained and to have built relationships with the key emergency response parts of the state are also crucial parts of this, and I think that this is really more of a continuum of that. This is the recovery side, but the immediate response side I think also has significant challenges, especially in greater Minnesota, and I hope we'll continue to learn those lessons and try to fashion a sensible state response.
A sensible policy.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I agree. Unfortunately, though, now you bring in another facet that a huge part of that deals with funding, either at the local level through property taxes or at the state level through bonding and or general appropriations. I want to remind members there is no appropriation in this bill, none, and that's deliberate. It's going to go to the Finance Committee so all the chairs can take a look at the policy. Disaster by disaster, we will target appropriations, but you are quite correct, and I think that one of the observations, particularly since 0304, is that when the cuts were made to balance the budget, most of it was on our local units of government, our counties and our cities, and it showed what happened when there aren't resources available, particularly when you're looking specifically at high-tech communications, and I'm not going to get into the 800 megahertz and the rest of it, but that was an issue in our area of the state, and it's going to be an issue until there is revenue available, either at the local level or from the state, to allow that technology to be put in place.
In addition to communications, the crucial factor for success is that the people involved have built a relationship with the other people involved, and that I think they, as they say, they're not trading business cards, and they show up at the scene of a disaster. And that does directly come from local resources for emergency response, because that is their primary funding source. And if they have not had the time to do the training and to build to put the plans together ahead of time and build the relationships, their response will not be what it needs to be and what I think the citizens of Minnesota expect. And that's, I think, the other key part in addition to communication.
Well, Madam Chair and members, again, we create the local units of government. It is our responsibility as the state of Minnesota, when a disaster hits that is statewide, particularly under a presidential declaration, to help the citizens of the state of Minnesota. That is, as a state representative, what I can deal with. I'm not a county commissioner. I'm not a city council member or a school board member.
Yes, that's been to Brad.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Pawlowski, I do appreciate what you're trying to do. Your last comment, though, sparked something in me in regards to your statement that at least in regards to when a presidential declaration has been made, and I would argue that there's a lot of small communities that whether it's risen to the extent of a presidential declaration or not, obviously have difficulty managing the challenges that are brought forward by specific disasters, the tornado in Lasura County being a great example of that. So I do appreciate the framework that you're bringing forward, not only for those who have a presidential declaration, but for those who do not have a presidential declaration as well. But my question is...
Well, Representative, let me respond to that comment first. I started out this discussion by saying we took the level of a presidential declaration because we needed a base to start with. I then added the caveat that if there is a disaster that does not warrant a presidential declaration, you can look at this statutory language and you can use it disaster by disaster, but at least there is a base to work with, an expectation of what these agencies should do and the authority of the agencies. So we took the presidential level because we needed some base. Mm-hmm. But if there is something like the SOAR, you could go to the statute and you could say, let's take this language or this responsibility and we will use it case by case. But the problem has been we have not done that. There has been no statutory reference. And what we have done, frankly, with the best of intentions, the result has been less than adequate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Pawlowski, I agree. But my question is related to a section in the bill on page 6, in section 10, subdivision 2. What I'm wondering is if this language also includes services provided to residents at the direction of the counties when those activities are delegated to the counties by the Department of Human Services.
Representative
Pawlowski.
You're going to have to explain your question. I don't think I understand.
The subdivision, too, I'm just wondering, it says here that other services provided on behalf of the Department of Human Services. And I know we have some county folks here in the audience, but the question really is counties direct services or provide services sometimes because they're forced to do so by the state, because the state is not doing those services or providing those services. So I just want to make sure this covers the services that the county is directing, not necessarily the department directing.
Representative Pawlowski.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Brown, yes.
Any other questions? If not, Representative Pawlowski wants to renew his motion.
If there's anyone that wishes to testify for or against the bill, we had representatives of the agencies here, but I don't think they need to come down unless there's a specific question.
Was there anyone in the audience that wanted to testify for or against? I can't see anybody. I don't believe so.
And once again, members who were not here earlier, we have worked with the governor's office. The last meeting was in the governor's office. We anticipate the governor's support of this bill, and I want to thank the governor and the agencies for working with us. So I will renew my motion that House File 2904 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
We're not yet adjourned, so I'm going to have, if I could have Representative Simon move the minutes from the last meeting.
I will do that. I move the minutes of the last meeting, which would have been the minutes of February 19, 2008.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. All right. The meeting is, actually, we have no meeting tomorrow, just for everyone's reference. And other than that, meeting is adjourned.